Ladies and gentlemen, how y'all doing? You awake? You're doing okay? Wonderful. Great to see you. Happy to be here with you again today. Welcome back to TOB Week 3. Welcome to all newcomers and to all returning customers. The Respect Life Office of the Archdiocese of Atlanta is donating free resources to you. This is, it's a really good book. It's Christopher West's Theology of Body for Beginners, Rediscovering the Meaning of Life, Love, Sex, and Gender. It's an incredibly good book and really a good next step. It's for free. It's for you. If you want to give a donation to the Respect Life Office, just put money in this box. But there's no shame. Just take it and read it. And now, a very important announcement.
911,
what's your emergency?
I think somebody broke into my head. He's unbelievable. Okay, stay where you are. We're going to send someone over right now.
Oh, shoot.
You do not have to do that. Oh, that
ain't so hold on. There's a video. That makes a lot more sense. Glad I caught that. Huh, why can't I, like, see things? So,
drag it left or right?
All right. Is that that works? You can see it now? Now, how do I get it to play?
911, what's your emergency?
I think somebody broke into my head. He's unbelievable.
Okay, stay where you are. We're going to send someone over right now.
Yeah, that was life changing for me. I just thought that would be good to lighten
the mood and laugh a little bit. We've been talking about some heavy things, and God knows where we're at, and he's journeying with us on this. So let's go before him in prayer. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen. Lord Jesus, we give you praise. We invite your Holy Spirit to come upon us now. That you would come upon us completely as we are. Thank you that you call us, you don't call the best version of us to come before you, like you call us to come as we are, with all our junk, with all the stuff we haven't got figured out yet. And thank you that through your power and your grace, you can transform us and bring us healing, fixing us a confidence in the power of your resurrection tonight, wherever we need it most. Blessed Mother, we ask through your prayers that you would redirect our desires to Jesus and the infinite love and ecstasy he wishes to pour out on us. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Tonight we're going to have Dr. Kathleen Raviel. Come on in, don't be shy. There's lots of seats in the front and stuff. Don't be shy at all. We have Dr. Kathleen Raviel, who's going to be speaking to us a little bit later. I'm just going to kind of intro in with a little bit more theological foundation for some of the things she has to say. But I want to show you this picture here is This is my goddaughter, Adrian. I know, she's amazingly cute. But it was really interesting. When Adrian was born, she had like this problem with her hips where she, like if she kept growing as it was gonna naturally grow, she wouldn't be able to walk. So she had to wear a brace. So the first time I met her, I saw her in this brace. And they didn't tell me like they were gonna ask me to be the godfather or anything. I was just going to see my friend's new baby. And I walked in and I see Adrian is in the crib and we have this like beautiful moment together where all of a sudden I just like stop talking to my friends John and Megan and I just see this baby who's broken. And like John and Megan like get really quiet too and they just watch this encounter happen like because they knew they're about to like this is gonna be someone really special in each other, both of our lives, but we're gonna be connected. And my heart was just so moved with love for her. She was broken, but like her brokenness didn't repulse me at all. But it actually drew me closer to her. Of course, I wanted her to get better. Like I wanted her to be able to walk. Like that would be the best thing, but her brokenness was not an obstacle to that. And I was just moved with love for this baby. This is the way God the Father looks upon us in our brokenness. We talked about last week of how man and woman from the beginning, we call these original man and woman, as God created us to be, that was free from the domination of sin. And we talked about how they were able to live in this harmony of love, this exchange of the gift. Where remember Melissa brought up some of the volunteers and when Adam looked at Eve, he saw through her body God. God's personal plan of love for him. And the same thing when Eve looked at Adam. And there was no thought of what they could get out of each other. There was only how much I can give out of gratefulness for the other person's existence, period. But then when sin comes along and we enter the dimension of man and woman as we know it in our broken world, this gift turns into grasping. Instead of how much can I give for the other, it's what can I get out of the other. Manipulation enters in and control. It's this brokenness that we find ourselves in that we're going to talk a lot about today. But remember, woundedness is the way to view our condition. We're not utterly depraved after the fall. We're not bad. This is the way to view you and I. Creatures who are utterly wounded from sin, but deeply soaked in the Father's love and his persistence in redeeming us. So not only are we left in the state of sin and fallen man, concupiscence, we're also the state of man experiencing the real redemption of Christ. This is the next stage that John Paul II talks about after talking about the garden and Adam and Eve. He talks about the state of us post the apple eating. And he begins with this phrase from the words of Christ. Last week, Christ said, in the beginning was not so, referring to adultery. And now, in this passage that of Christ, he says, you have heard it said that you shall not commit adultery. Jesus referenced the commandment. But I say to you, whoever looks at a woman with lust in his heart has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Tough words from the mouth of Jesus Christ. I remember I was at Mass one time as a kid, and like, I'm just sitting there, and the deacon's reading the gospel, and he says that, you already committed adultery with her in her heart. The gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God. And I'm sitting there like, horrified. I'm like, no, everyone's just like, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I am going to hell. Like 5 million times over, I'm going to hell. Did you hear what he just said? If you so look at a woman with lust in your heart, that's the only way I knew how to look at woman. Seriously. And so I have this master plan, right? You know, okay, well, I'll just try to hold my breath, you know, through my young years, and eventually I'll get married, and then that will be the way that I live my chastity out. Then I'll just kind of, just all the things that I've been holding back, my wife will solve them for me, right? John Paul II makes it very clear. It's on the sheet, some table, I don't know who's gonna sit where, but there's sheets there with quotes, so the stuff we say is legit. He makes it very clear that even if a man were to look this way at a woman who is his wife, he would be guilty of the same adultery in the heart.
What?
What sense are we to make of this? Well, a couple things. First of all, what is the meaning of adultery of the heart that Jesus is speaking of? He's saying there's an inner movement of the heart where the ethic alone, do not commit adultery, is one thing. But the movement of the heart to value the woman or the man as another worthy of giving my life to, of another one who belongs, who comes from the Father, and is a person worthy of dignity and respect. This should be the inner ethos that moves and motivates and fulfills the ethic. Ethos, ethic. We might get confused, a lot of us, when we're hearing that, and you hear Jesus' words and freak out like me. We might think that, just have no fear of our thoughts, for example, and I just think that needs to be said. You know, in the movie Ghostbusters, there's this great scene at the end where there's this evil queen and demoness person, and she's just like, "Choose your fate. The next thought you think of, I will raise up as a monster that will destroy the world." And the Ghostbusters are like, "Oh, we got this. I'm just not gonna think." And they're like, "Nah, nah, 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 nah. No thinking, no thinking. Bob, you think about anything?" Bob's like, "No, I'm not. No, no, I'm not thinking about anything now. No, 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 no." And then the queen's like, "Your fate has been chosen." Like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 no, 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 no. Wait, what are you talking about? Bob, what happened? Oh, no, I'm sorry. I just couldn't help it. It was a thought that came to me." "What, Bob? What thought?" "The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man." And then the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man on the next scene is giant, is going down the streets of New York and terrorizing everything. So here's the good news. Jesus isn't so concerned with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Mans that pop into your head. That's not what he means by the adultery of the heart. When thoughts arise and the impurities that come in our heart, he's inviting us to take them as they are and lay them at the feet of Jesus. That's what true chastity is. True chastity is not having a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man come into your mind. True chastity is presenting everything to Jesus and letting him give new form to our strongest desires. Ooh, it's so exciting. This is a picture of the virtue of chastity. I think in the Sistine Chapel, I don't know, but they each have virtues, and the woman is a bare-breasted woman, and she's wrangling what is representative of male and female components. The flower, ready, poised and ready to receive, I guess you'd say the bee's pollen, and then the unicorn, with imagery that is unmistakable. There is a strength and a vitality and a power in that unicorn. This is the imagery that the church uses to portray the virtue of chastity. Far from a saying no and a flat line to everything, it is a complete redirection of desire without losing any of its intensity. If we are to redirect our desire, our eros, that Pope Benedict talks about in his letter, in his encyclical letter, Deus Caritas Est, that eros must be completely integrated with agape love. If it is not, it becomes impoverished and even loses its own nature. But that doesn't mean we need to... Losing eros is not the answer. It's a redirection that Christ can do in our hearts to transform us to love as we're called to love, and ultimately love the one we're called to love. Where are we redirecting our desires and our eros ultimately for? We remember this woman. This woman knew how to redirect her desire completely to the Lord, experienced it so much in this life that she conceived divine life within her. In the true revelation, this is so cool. This is just so cool. In the revelation of Christianity, our bodies speak something. We're not just like bodies, but our bodies actually communicate words. Like there's John Paul II talks about the prophetism of the body. What's a prophet? A prophet is the one who speaks the word of God truthfully. And the prophet can typically speak with their mouth, but through the body, in this whole theology of the body, that our bodies can speak something. What does a woman's body speak in light of Christian revelation? Ladies, your bodies reveal heaven. Woman's body has become the dwelling place of God. Very, very literally. It's something that woman's body shares in. What does a man's body speak, communicate? A call to enter the gates of heaven. I know. This is what our bodies can speak as they are, and just the call for every human person to enter into love. But what about the communication that in the one flesh union where man and woman come together? What is that speaking? We've been talking about how that union of man and woman points and foreshadows to the union of Christ and the church. That this earthly marriage points and reveals and really is only fully understood in light of a heavenly marriage where God wants to become one body with us. This is the rite of Catholic marriage. This is what you'll say, and what you've already said, I guess, if you have gotten married. Notice the things I've underlined. These promises that are made. If you come here freely, will you love each other as man and wife for the rest of your lives? Will you accept children lovingly from God and bring them up according to Christ in this church? This free, total, faithful, and fruitful gifts and promises that are made. I suggest to you this power that when couples come together as man and woman in the one flesh union, they speak prophetically the word of God to the entire world. They speak the truth of God in harmony. That this very action of their bodies together and the love they pour out reveals something authentically truthful about the love of Christ and his church. And even more so, the love in God, in the Godhead himself. This God who is three in one with relations of total pouring out and total receptivity. It's a great mystery. Now what happens if one of these things is not there? If there are true prophets, the Bible also tells us very much about false prophets. Those who speak the word of God a little off. If one of these things are lacking, it speaks a false truth about Christ's love for the church and even about who God is. That the whole world is in the dark to be able to see the sign that this is supposed to give. Let me give an example. Human trafficking, right? We can all agree, I would hope in this room, that this is very wrong. It's child sex trafficking when a 12-year-old girl is sold into sex slavery. Agreed. Disgustingly wrong. Let me ask you, why though? What makes our hearts scream out against that? Well, it's one of these things, right? First of all, I mean, it's many things, but first of all, it's not really free. And our hearts know that sexual love should be free. Our hearts just know that. And our culture is more sensitive to that particular thing. But I suggest that that is the real root of that. There are many controversial teachings in the church, some we'll address today, but a lot of them have to do with this idea of the unitive and procreative elements of sex being taken away from each other. And it's for that same reason, that if there's a harmony, remember in week one we talked about the Song of Songs, this divine love song that's woven into the fabric of all creation, if there's a harmony in our bodies and the union of man and woman, then there's a way to if one of these are taken away, it's like a disharmony. It's like a jolting. And we're no longer raised up to the full value of the Song of Songs. So Dr. Kathleen, let me introduce her a little bit more so she can go a little bit more in depth on that. Dr. Kathleen Raviel is a board-certified gynecologist in the Atlanta area. She's a fellow in the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. She served on the board of the Catholic Medical Association, CMA, in various roles for over 15 years. She was president of the CMA in 2008 and serves as the CMA's representative. And Siri saying, what can I help you with in the middle of this? She is the volunteer medical director of the Pregnancy Aid Clinic and has assisted in the passage of pro-life legislation in Georgia. She completed the National Catholic Bioethics Center's course on healthcare ethics in 2010, promotes the church teachings on marriage and family life in the Archdiocese of Atlanta through parish talks and marriage prep talks. She has been certified to teach four methods of natural family planning, which is, and has been an active leader for 25 years. She participated in several of the research studies published on the Marquette Method of NFP in conjunction with the Institute of Natural Family Planning at the College of Nursing, Marquette University. And while they're still getting set up, the contraception is something that Dr. Kathleen is going to chat with us about too. And that would, the basis for that would be, that's one of those things that we're missing from that section. So natural family planning she'll talk about is a way of church, it's something that the church has sanctioned as a way of rightly loving while being responsible in parenthood. She's gonna tell us a lot more about that. Please welcome Dr. Kathleen.
Is there a pointer on there too?
Oh, there is. Oh, good.
Well, I'll tell you, Joey's a very tough act to follow. That was great, Joey. Let me ask all of you, does anybody here know what the significance was of July 25th, 2018? It was the 50th anniversary of one of the most difficult documents published on the teaching of the church on human sexuality, Humanae Vitae. And I've been to several programs over the course of this year, conferences on Humanae Vitae. Has anybody here ever read the document, Humanae Vitae? A couple. I would ask all of you, sometime this week, before you all meet again in a week, to do a Google search and pull it up. It's only 15 pages long. You can easily understand it and read it. Because in there, the document was written in 1968, Pope Paul VI, who was just canonized Sunday, he also made some prophecies about what was going to happen to the relationship between men and women, to young people, governments, and their relationship with the privacy of individuals, if we accepted contraception. And I want you to read that document. So what we're going to talk about is because also in that document, Pope Paul VI called on physicians and men of science to come up with better, more effective methods of natural family planning to compete against methods of contraception that were coming out. Oh, probably, yeah, okay.
We'll
you're gonna be clicking away for nothing. Okay. I'm not going to be teaching you NFP this session. You're so fortunate. Here at the cathedral, Ann LaBarre Hall's been a dedicated, great NFP teacher for many years. There are also, this archdiocese has teachers of all the different methods of NFP. And now you can go online and earn NFP from a certified teacher. So what do you think of when you hear the term natural family planning? Anybody say anything they want? Go ahead.
Don't use contraception.
That you don't use contraception, that's correct. You can't say you're using NFP if you're using area methods, for example. What else? What else would you say when you hear the term natural family planning?
Rhythms.
Rhythm? That was the original method of NFP. Pardon me? Charting. Pardon me?
Organic.
Yeah, natural, organic. We could go into a whole big discussion about pollution from hormones, but we won't go into that. Anything else?
Holistic.
Pardon me? Holistic. If a couple gets married, say in their middle 20s, and they don't do anything to avoid pregnancy, breastfeeding actually does space children about 2 years apart. How many children do you think they'd end up having by the time the woman could no longer have children? 18. Some would have 18. Some would have none. 15% of couples experience infertility, and some of them never are able to achieve a pregnancy. But the average would be 10. So in the United States today, most couples don't feel they can handle 10 children, although there are many couples who are also very generous to human life and do have 8, 9, 10 children. But natural family planning helps you space your children so you don't have 10 children. So what is the reason, those of you who are married, those of you who are engaged, those of you who are thinking about getting engaged, what is the reason that you get married? What are you hoping for in your marriage? Joey just mentioned some of the things that, you know, you take as vows when you get married. But what are you hoping for when you get married?
Heaven.
Heaven. Sometimes you marry the cross, however. So there's no resurrection before Good Friday. But that cross may help you get to heaven. What else?
Children.
Yeah. Very important to talk about that before you get married. You certainly don't want to marry somebody who says, I don't want to have any children. That's avoiding the purpose of marriage. What else?
A home.
Pardon me?
A home.
A home? Home, you said?
Like a house.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's somebody that you trust. You know, this is the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with, that you can tell them anything, and you know they will accept you. You know, it's a relationship that you don't have with your mother or your father or your siblings. But as we talked about, there are challenges to living with your fertility. If you say, okay, I'm Catholic, we can't use methods of contraception, so what are we going to do? So what I'm going to talk about is define what is natural family planning. I'm going to give you an overview of how it works. I'm going to talk about the effectiveness. Are you going to have 10 children? And we're going to talk about the marital and spiritual benefits of using NFP. Well, natural family planning is defined as one of the methods of monitoring and interpreting a woman's natural biological markers of fertility, because men are always fertile. From the time a man enters puberty until the time he dies, he could father a child if his wife is young enough. But women are not always fertile. And so the couple uses that information to determine the fertile and infertile time of the woman's cycle to either achieve or to avoid a pregnancy. Sometimes couples learn NFP for the first time because they're having trouble getting pregnant. It also means, nobody said this, it also means that you are abstaining from intercourse and genital contact during the fertile time of the cycle if you want to avoid pregnancy. Do you know that's really good for a marriage? If you liked ice cream and every night you ate a gallon of ice cream before you went to bed, you know, you enjoy that ice cream, but after a while you get a little sick of it, and you also would have other consequences because you would start gaining a lot of weight. Well, it is the same in a marriage. When a couple abstains for a few days and comes back together again, it's like being on their honeymoon again. It enlivens the marriage. It also helps the couple develop non-genital ways of expressing their love for each other. You know, say your husband just loves corned beef and cabbage. You can't stand the smell of cooking cabbage, but you know he loves that. So once a month, because you love him and you're showing him a non-genital way how much you love him, you cook corned beef and cabbage. It also means that the couple is not, and then he needs to take you out to dinner. It also means that the couple is not using any artificial means to interfere with their fertility. So every time they engage in the marital act, they are open to the possibility that God might create a new life, even if they think it's a time when he wouldn't be able to do it because she's not fertile. So somebody mentioned calendar rhythm. The original method of NFP was called calendar rhythm, was developed in 1930 by an OBGYN in the United States, a Catholic OBGYN who wrote a book called Rhythm. And it was based on the understanding that we did not have until about 1929 that when a woman ovulates, she gets her period 2 weeks later. Not that you get your period and then you ovulate 2 weeks later, because if that happened, everybody would use NFT. They always knew they'd ovulate on day 14, so it'd be very easy. So with that, you would go back in your previous two-year history of periods and say the longest cycle you had the previous 2 years was 30 days. You would subtract 18. No, I think it originally started out, 18. So that would be day 8. So you were infertile through day 8. And you take the shortest cycle you had the previous 2 years, say it was 26, and you would subtract 10. And that would be day 16. So the couple would abstain between day 9 and day 15. And how effective do you think that method was to avoid pregnancy in 1930 or 1935 or 1940? Anybody guess? How much? Not very. What does not vary?
20%?
20%? 70, you're getting closer.
80?
Getting closer. It's actually 85% effective if the woman had regular cycles and they followed those instructions. Now, what methods of contraception were available in 1930, 1935? Thanks to Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. Barrier methods, which also has a typical effectiveness of 85%. So the original method of NFP was very competitive with methods of contraception. But as we'll go into it, not everybody has regular cycles, as many of you know. So around 1930, they also discovered that when a woman ovulates, her temperature rises, her temperature first thing in the morning before she gets out of bed, basal body temperature. So that was added to calendar calculations for NFP. Then in the 1950s and 60s, two physicians, a husband and wife team in Australia, Drs. John and Lynn Billings, were teaching calendar calculations, teaching temperature, and their pastor challenged them to come up with a simpler method of NFP that could be used even by people who didn't have thermometers or and couldn't keep track of their cycles. So they came up with the ovulation method, which was a mucus method, where the woman just pays attention to mucus when she goes to the bathroom, and she can tell by what she's seeing on the toilet paper whether she's getting ready to ovulate. Taught in over 100 countries around the world. The great program that Ann teaches here is a modification of the ovulation method. And then other groups took a combination of calendar calculations, basal body temperature, mucus observations to come up with what are called symptothermal programs. A couple of ladies here in the Archdiocese, they're a symptothermal program in Northwest. But now, and I would say in the past 20 years, the technology is rapidly progressing that we are really able to monitor women's hormones by very simple, inexpensive hormone tests. Right now with urine, but pretty soon it's going to be like a finger prick, like if you're diabetic, you can check your hormones. So how does NFP work? Well, women are not fertile all the time, even though they're treated that way. There's, in fact, only a six-day window every cycle where they are fertile. And those 6 days are composed of 5 days of sperm survival and 24 hours of egg survival. So if a couple has relations on day 10, they don't have relations again, and on day 15 the woman ovulates, she could still get pregnant because sperm can live up to 5 days. If they have intercourse on day 6 and she ovulates on day 14, that's too far out, the sperm will not survive. So the day of ovulation when the egg is released and for 24 hours and for the 5 days before ovulation. Now all the different methods have been charting, and this is, we always start with the first day of the period over here, the last day before the next period begins. These are the days of the period. Women's periods are anywhere from 3 to 7 days. Then the woman goes into a period of infertility until the egg starts getting ready to ovulate and she's in her fertile phase. All the programs help you identify that. We help you identify as closely as possible the actual day of ovulation, and then you move into the post-ovulatory infertile phase. Now, if a woman has a really serious reason to avoid pregnancy, she's on a drug, blood pressure medicine, she's on chemotherapy, something like that, where she really cannot get pregnant, she can still use NFP by just using, by not using this clicker, by just using the post-ovulatory infertile phase. You have a zero chance of getting pregnant if you're in the post-ovulatory infertile phase. I'll explain why. Now, calendar rhythm didn't work for everybody because not everybody has regular cycles. And this, in this first cycle up here, this woman ovulates over here around, I can't remember exactly, but I think it's around day 15. And then in the second cycle, she ovulates over here on day 11. And then in this cycle, she doesn't ovulate until out here on day 22. But notice the days after ovulation, the post-ovulatory phase, are all the same. What's varying is the actual day of ovulation. But if she had been doing calendar rhythm and just figured that she was fertile here, she would have gotten pregnant this cycle, or she would have gotten pregnant that cycle. So the modern methods of NFP help you actually identify your fertility. Okay, let me just give you a quick little anatomy thing. I'm not going to be teaching you anything that's going to be embarrassing or anything. But basically, women's reproductive organs are all within the body. This is the uterus, which is about the size of a pear. It has smooth muscle, the myometrium, the wall of the uterus, which is what contracts when you have cramps with a period, and what contracts when you have a baby and push the baby out. Inside the uterus is the lining of the uterus that is changed by your hormones over the course of the month, the endometrium. It's what sheds when you have a period. At the opening to the uterus is the cervix. The cervix is what holds the baby in. It's where we do a pap smear when you come in for an exam. But it also has very important glands in it that respond to the woman's hormones that produce the mucus discharge that help the sperm to live up to how many days?
Five.
And then off the uterus on each side is the fallopian tube, a very narrow, delicate channel. And next to the uterus on each side is the ovary. Now, when a little girl is born, she has 500,000 eggs in each ovary. And she doesn't make any more. And a lot of them, for some reason, die off when she's born. We don't know why that happens. But then they go into a state of quiescence until she enters puberty. And then once she enters puberty, those eggs are maturing every month, almost like waves breaking up on shore, except only one every month, in general, will get recruited to ovulate, unless you have a history of fraternal twins. The cervix, the opening to the uterus there, as I say, has these glands that responds to the woman's hormones. When she's under the influence of estrogen, it produces a very fertile, watery mucus. Sperm will live up to 3 to 5 days in that mucus. When it's under progesterone, the other female hormone, it becomes a thick plug and prevents sperm penetration. So in the ovary over the course of the month, this is, believe me, a simplification. I'll tell you, if anybody is having some doubts about whether God exists, just study the ovary. I'm not kidding. What we have learned about what goes on in the ovary over the past 50 years, it's like a symphony playing. This is not something that's just coincidental or came from a black hole. I mean, it is unbelievable. So every month, about 5 or 6 of these eggs get recruited to a certain point, but only one of them generally goes on to become what we call the dominant follicle. The follicle is the case that the egg is in here, and it matures, producing increasing amounts of estrogen until it gets ripe. And when the follicle is about 2 centimeters in diameter, ovulation occurs, the egg is extruded from the ovary, the follicle involutes and becomes the corpus luteum. So in the first half of the cycle before ovulation, estrogen is the dominant hormone, and after ovulation, progesterone is the dominant hormone. And progesterone is what makes the mucus go away, primes the uterus for a normal period, and also allows for implantation and successful pregnancy. So when we're teaching NFP, we're actually looking directly or indirectly at the woman's hormones. We're looking at estrogen, which is made by the follicle, stimulates the production of cervical mucus. If you're doing the Marquette program, it tests high fertility on a monitor. If we're also looking at LH directly, if you're using the fertility monitor, which LH is a hormone made in the brain, in the pituitary gland, luteinizing hormone, it surges the day before the woman ovulates and causes ovulation to occur. And then we're also looking at progesterone, which is made after ovulation in the corpus luteum. It's what raises the woman's body temperature, dries up the cervical mucus, and primes the uterus for a normal period or for successful pregnancy. Now, the Marquette method, which we did several studies on here in Atlanta, is the program that is officially using what's called Clear Blue Fertility Monitor. This monitor was developed for infertility. You cannot go out and buy it and say, okay, this is our method of NFP, we're just going to do what the monitor says, because the monitor does not always give you the 5-day warning that you need that you're getting ready to ovulate. But the monitor actually measures your hormones. So this blue line is estrogen. As that follicle matures, your estrogen levels rise. They peak the day before you ovulate. And it also measures with 99% certainty the LH surge, which is what actually stimulates ovulation to occur. And I will tell you, the monitor has saved a lot of couples I've seen over the years who were confused with the other observations, but finally could actually measure their hormones directly. So the signs of fertility that are taught in all these different programs, there are some calendar calculations still. Basal body temperature is still an important part of NFP. We teach you how to monitor the cervical mucus, and with the Marquette program, you learn about the changes in your hormones. All the programs teach you the markers for the beginning of your fertile phase, because how many days do sperm survive? 5. So you have to know the beginning of the mucus, the beginning of your fertility, because you don't know, ovulation changes a little bit every month. You have to know that ahead of time. Also, it tells with the monitor, it tells you the rising levels of estrogen. That would then tell you that you were getting ready to ovulate. And then one of the programs, and I'll explain it, the very simple program, also still uses the shortest cycle minus 20 days to determine the beginning of fertility. Then we help you identify your peak fertility, which is very close to the actual day of ovulation, which is seen by the clear, stretchy, slippery cervical mucus, rise in the basal body temperature, and a peak on the monitor. And then, more importantly, if you want to avoid pregnancy, you want to understand the end of your fertility. So basically, it's a count of 3 after all of these different signs. Peak, mucus, count of 3, third day of temperature rise, peak in the LH, plus a count of 3, or with the calendar calculations, the longest cycle, minus 10 days, or day 19 with one of the programs that I'll show you. This is a basal body temperature chart, so the woman wakes up every morning at the same time. We've got these wonderful little digital thermometers now, basal body temperature. It takes like 30 seconds to take your temperature. And you take your temperature every morning before you get out of bed. There's some variability every day, but right around the time of ovulation, there's a little dip, and then the temperature rises at least 2/10 of a degree and stays up until your progesterone levels fall right before your period, called the biphasic shift. This is the clear blue monitor. This is the older monitor, but basically you're measuring estrogen and LH with urine tests. This is day 3 of the cycle. The woman gets up in the morning, turns the machine on. She won't even have to test. It's a day of low fertility because it's day 3 of her cycle. This is day 12 of the cycle. She's tested her urine. 2 bars are filled in. It's a day of high fertility, high probability of getting pregnant. And then this is the peak day when she's actually ovulating. There are 3 bars filled in with a little egg at the top. So that is her peak fertility. And this is a new clear blue monitor. It has a touch screen, and it looks a little bit different than the older monitor. So all the programs teach you what the instructions are for either achieving or avoiding a pregnancy. If you want to achieve a pregnancy, you have relations during the fertile window. So couples really should kind of have a discussion every month. Okay, what are we doing this month? Are we going to have a baby? Are we going to try to achieve a pregnancy? Are we going to avoid a pregnancy? Let's make sure we're on the same page with all that. Or if you want to avoid pregnancy, you don't have relations during the fertile window. I had a couple several years ago that I taught NFP to after they had been trying to get pregnant for about 2 years. And lo and behold, she was ovulating on day 21. They were focusing on day 12, 13, 14, 15, and then by day 21 they had pooped out. And so it was only after learning NFP that they realized we're not ovulating early. We're ovulating at the regular time. We're ovulating a week later. Okay, so how effective is natural family planning? As I say, there's been a lot of science done, especially the past 20 years. Well, whenever we talk about NFP or we talk about methods of contraception, there are 2 terms that you have to understand. First of all is perfect use. You did everything perfectly. Now, you're not perfect, but basically, you know, if you were on the pill, you took the pill every day. If you're using NFP, you made the observations, you charted, and you used days of infertility. Typical uses, you started cutting corners. You started using days of fertility, or you got confused about whether or not you were fertile, or you didn't take the pill. So these are several studies that were of various natural family planning programs. The first one here is actually from the World Health Organization, not a Catholic organization. And they looked at the ovulation method and found that perfect use was 97% effective. Typical use was 78% effective. These are also, this is also another ovulation method study. This is Dr. Howard, who did a study on the Creighton program. She claimed 100% perfect use, 86% typical use. And then we look to go down here. These are two very simple programs that were developed at Georgetown University because they found, you know, people in other countries, especially Central and South America, the Philippines, who wanted to follow Catholic teaching, but there weren't any NFP teachers around, and they didn't want 15 children. So they developed two very simple methods. One of them is called Cycle Beads. It's a fixed calendar program. And that they tested this on women who were not well educated or anything like that. Perfect use was 95% effective. Typical use was 88% effective. Then they also developed a two-day mucus program. So the woman didn't have to be charting or anything like that. She just had to pay attention. Did I see any mucus today? No. Did I see any mucus yesterday? No. Okay, we're infertile at the end of today. If the answer was yes to any or both of those questions, then they were fertile. So she kept going in two-day segments. And that was 96% perfect use, 86% typical use. This is a mucus temperature program from Germany. This group in Germany actually has probably published more on NFP than any other researchers in the world. Pope Benedict, when he was cardinal there, had really encouraged these researchers to develop better methods of NFP. This is a symptothermal program, mucus and temperature. 99% perfect use, 92% typical use. And then this is one of the Marquette studies. There have been about 10 published, but 98% perfect use, 87% typical use. This was a compilation of mucus temperature programs and mucus programs. The study was done back, it was just a compilation study of 23 ovulation method studies that have been published and 15 symptothermal studies. Again, a high degree of effectiveness, perfect use. Typical use when people start cutting corners or not doing it correctly drops down to about the range of typical use of condoms. Now, how does NFP compare with other methods of contraception? If a couple of normal fertility does nothing to avoid pregnancy, 85% of them will be pregnant by a year. Notice I didn't say 100%. And that's even, these are normal couples, they don't have infertility. So most of the time, most couples who don't have any trouble, any problems with infertility, would be pregnant in a year, but not always. Sometimes it would take a year, 2 years, sometimes 3 years. But by 1 year is when we start evaluating couples because they should have been pregnant by then. Spermicides has perfect use, pregnancy rate of 18%, typical use 29%, withdrawal perfect use 4%, typical use is 27%. Condoms, perfect use is 2%, typical is 15%. The standard days method, the cycle beads, 5%, typical use 12%. Ovulation method is 3%, typical 16%. Mucus temperature 2%, 11%. IUD or pill 0.3, although that is extremely optimistic. It's really more like 3 to 7% even perfect use. Typical use 8%. IUD 0.1%, typical 0.6%. Is there anything there that has no chance of getting pregnant? No. What's the only way to avoid getting pregnant? Right. So there's no perfect way. But you don't hear people going around saying, oh, we got pregnant on the pill. No, they don't say that. They keep it to themselves. But if a couple does get pregnant with NFP, and they were planning on getting pregnant in 6 months, but they decided to start a little bit ahead of time, they'll say, oh, we got pregnant using NFP. No. Several years ago, there was a couple that helped with Engaged Encounter, facilitated Engaged Encounter. And they learned NFP before they got married. They were in their middle 20s. And on their honeymoon, it was during her fertile window. And they said, what the heck, we're married. So they had intercourse, and they got pregnant. And everybody said, oh my gosh, you're having a baby. You don't even have your first anniversary yet. They had a beautiful little baby boy. They never were able to get pregnant again. That was their only child. They went through infertility workups. They couldn't find anything wrong with them. Finally, several years later, they adopted another child. But they said they were so glad they had used their honeymoon because they wouldn't have had that one child. So you don't know what's going to be happening down the road. So with accurate charting, accurate observations, consistent use of the method, mutual motivation, and love and cooperation, almost always both the man and the woman come to the classes, then NFP is close to 98% perfect use effective. So the Billings ovulation method, we have a couple of teachers down in the south side of the city. One teacher teaches in Spanish also. This is a mucus-only program. The Creighton model that Ann LaBar Hall teaches here. The Creighton model is kind of a refinement of the Billings program, but more importantly, Dr. Hilgers developed a program he calls NAPRO Technology, but he trains physicians, nurse practitioners, medical assistants to treat women without using birth control pills. Because when you go through medical school and residency, that's all they offer you. I mean, it's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Okay, if you have this, the treatment is a birth control pill. If you have that, the treatment is a birth control pill. If you have that, the treatment is a birth control pill. I mean, let's use our imagination. There are many other ways to treat these things. But perfect use, you know, has a high degree of effectiveness here. This is Couple to Couple League. We have, I think, about four couples here in Atlanta who are trained to teach this. Because also Pope Paul VI said couples need to help other couples with NFP. And then there's some new methods of NFP the past 20 years. This is the cycle beads, the standard days method. And this is the program that I said perfect use is 95%, typical use is 88%. The requirement is that your periods come 26 to 32 days apart, from the first day of one period to the last day before the next period begins. So what you do is you take this little black spacer here, this little black, where's the ring? Oh, here's the ring here on this one. And on the first day of your period, you put it on the red bead, and then every morning you get up and advance it. And all these brown beads here are your infertile. And then when you get down to the white beads and advance it, these are the days of fertility. And then when you get over here, you're back into the infertile time. If you get out to this dark brown bead here and you've already started your period, your cycles are too close together and you can't use that method. You might be pregnant at that point too. But actually you start your period, right? So, but if you get out to this spacer here and you have not started your period, then you also can't cycles are too far apart. And it's interesting, such a simple program, and I love this too, because if you have a parish with people who don't speak English well, it's a perfect method of NFP for them, because through translators you can teach it in a relatively short period of time. They also designed it so that these white beads here are glow in the dark. So if you turn the light out and say, honey, what, where are we in the cycle? Well, right now that little black ring is on there, so do you want a baby or not? And the two-day method that they came up with to a high degree of effectiveness, and it's really easy to teach, just teach the woman how to do mucus observations. This was the central thermal program that the group in Germany does with a high degree of effectiveness. The German women and men must be very precise, I guess, in how they're doing things. So this is the Marquette program. There have been many, many studies published on this, and this method also is doing a lot in working with women with difficult cycles and breastfeeding when you're not having a period, to make sure that you understand when your fertility is coming back. But the monitor is used in conjunction with cervical mucus or with an algorithm. You cannot just go by the monitor and say, okay, this is what we're doing for NFP. But now I realized I just retired in August, but for the past 3 years, I guess, you walk in the room and say, okay, what was the first day of your last period? And what do? You pull out your phone, you know? So it's great because everybody knows, all the women know the first day of their last period. So increasingly there are apps on the phone that help women with their cycles, but most of them are not NFP apps. So you have to be very careful that you're not using one of those apps as your method of NFP unless it is an NFP app. Couple to Couple League, the Symptothermal program, does have an app. I think it's called ProGo or something like that. If you just put in Couple to Couple League app, it'll show up on your smartphone. The Marquette method actually has an app that teaches you and tells you whether or not you're fertile. And it is based on research. So it is a reliable app, and it's free. Then let's just finish up a little bit. Why do NFP? You know, it's so easy to go get a pill or whatever. But as Joey mentioned, talking about it, we have to remember that marriage is a sacrament. It's not just a contract you have with another person. Well, we'll see if this works out. No, it's a sacrament. It's a sign of God's presence in the world. And it's also a source of grace for a couple. And this has been borne out by sociological studies. People who get married in the eyes of God are more able to handle difficulties that come up in life than people who are living together, when they're just in a civil marriage. God's plan for marriage is that it's a permanent, faithful, exclusive relationship between a husband and a wife, directed towards their mutual sanctification. I was married 25 years before I learned that I was supposed to be helping my husband get to heaven. Mm-hmm. Our marriage prep was 15 minutes with the priest, because back then we didn't have marriage prep programs. Now we have to use a weekend or one day to discuss it. Well, when you find that out, it changes the way you talk to your spouse. Mm-hmm. For the better, by far. It's also a sign of unity. Couples present a unified front to the world and to their children. It's the way God intended children to come into the world. Who do you think is the most important parent?
God.
I'm talking about human parents. Human parents. The mother. You would think the mother, right? It's the father. The father is the most important parent, which is why we're having a lot of trouble in our culture today. Because there are so many families that don't have a father in the house. There are things that fathers do for their children that mothers don't do. The mother's there to take care of all the meals, the clothes, getting you to school, homework. But there are other things that fathers do that are affirming to children, teaching them how to be boys and girls, how to grow up as responsible people. And that's why a lot of women who are raising children by themselves are having a lot of trouble with their kids when they're teenagers, especially the boys. Once they get to be 12 or 13, they don't have a dad there to model. So it's really important that we encourage families to stay together. And also studies have shown that people who are married are happier. And today in the United States, we have more single people than we have ever had. And that's not a good thing for happiness. And this was comes out of a national marriage project that was published in 2011, Why Marriage Matters. 23 different sociological studies on different combinations of living arrangements and where people are happiest. And husband, wife, and children are happiest in marriage. The marital act is something, as Joey mentioned, that's something uniquely human. There's total self-giving of the husband and the wife to the husband is meant to be faithful until death do you part. And then sometimes it is meant to be fruitful. Why use NFP? NFP works with your nature rather than doing something to oppose it or override it. It helps couples learn to live with their fertility, because our fertility is not a disease. Infertility is a disease. And so couples are able to live holistic, healthy, and holy marriages. And it allows couples to respect the laws of nature, which actually God has written on their hearts. Many couples come to NFP not because they're Catholic, but they just feel like they need to do something differently. There are lots of benefits to using NFP. Oh my gosh, you women will understand your cycle and what's going on with your body much better even than your regular OB-GYN will. And it's perfectly safe and healthy. There's nothing about NFP that's going to harm you in any way. It also fosters communication. The husband and the wife talk about this to each other, and that fosters intimacy. It fosters self-mastery, because you are abstaining for a few days every month. But couples who use NFP generally become very sharing and generous to human life. They don't have just one or two children, I'm sorry, because they view their children differently. They don't view their children as possessions whereas objects, we're just going to take time out right now to have these two children, I hope it's a boy and a girl, otherwise you might have to have a third, but they view their children differently, because every child is different, and they have two, and they say, wow, let's have a third, even though we have a boy and a girl. The family's going to say, why are you having more children? And then they have a third, and they say, well, let's have a fourth, and let's have a fifth. Well, maybe we'll stop at four. But anyway, and there's nothing about NFP that goes against any moral, ethical, or spiritual belief. And couples come to realize that their fertility is a holy time when they can become co-creators with God. I had one couple that I taught NFP to who were Protestant. They weren't Catholic. And after they had been coming to classes it was the Creighton program, so it was like 6 months into the program, he said to me, you know what, after we got married, marriage prep, I told her I didn't want to have any children. We were just going to have granddogs for our parents. And she was crushed. She'd been on the pill already for several years for medical reasons, and she convinced him that she needed to come off the pill and do NFP. So they were doing NFP for 6 months, and he said, now that I see her cycle every month, I'm thinking, well, of course we should have some children. And a few months later, he called her up at work and said, you know, we've got a house, we've got jobs, we've got cars, let's start a family. They had children that they never would have had if she'd stayed on the pill. And couples also find when they do NFP that it deepens their love. I cannot tell you the countless examples of couples I've seen, how their relationship changed over the course of their lives. And they were so much happier as compared to my old practice when I used to prescribe contraception and see people get so unhappy in their marriages and all that. These couples really love each other. I want to present one case to give an example. I had a couple who came to me, they already had five children, they didn't want to have any more. And so they learned NFP. He was a firefighter, captain actually of his fire department. And one Sunday morning he was out with his older boys riding all-terrain vehicles, and he had a major accident with a head injury. And they called her up, they were air flighting into Grady. They got him to Grady, he was unconscious. And within a few hours of his arriving there, they told her, you know what, he's going to be a vegetable, and we're just going to, you know, let's decelerate on all these things, and by the way, can we have his organs? And she said, no. You are going to take care of my husband. I just want his sense of humor back. That's all she said. Well, after several weeks, he came out of the coma, and she got him in Shepherd's Spinal Center. And when he came into Shepherd's Spinal Center on a stretcher, the doctor said, okay, I'm not very optimistic about this, but we'll go ahead and work on this. But, you know, he's never going to walk again. You're going to have to take care of him at home. And she said, I don't care. I just want to get him home because I want the sense of humor back. He walked out of Shepherd's Spinal Center on a walker. He's back as a firefighter. You would not even know he had an accident. He's perfectly fine. And it was because his wife loved him so much and she fought for him that he survived all that. So NFP strengthens married love and helps couples live in peace and security, the villain said. So we should grow in God's love. I'm going to leave this up for a minute because there are several websites of all the modern methods of NFP there. And some of them, Couple to Couple League has a home study course, but there are teachers also available. The Institute of Reproductive Health also has their two-day method and their cycle beads method. Because this was funded with U.S. aid money, though, they talk about using barriers during the fertile time. We don't do that as Catholics, but ignore that part. Just learn the program. The Marquette method, also you can learn online. And we have two very active teachers here in the Archdiocese who, one of them has taught like 700 couples online. She's been very active doing that. As I say, Anne LeBar Hall is a Pope Paul VI teacher, also Kelly Castleberry. And you can also go on the website of the Atlanta Archdiocese under Ministries, Marriage and Family, and you have a complete list of all the NFP teachers and how to get in touch with them. And it doesn't matter whether a class is starting or something, you just call the teacher and they'll get you started on a class. So I'll end here.
And sharing your time with us. At this time, let's break up into some small groups, and we don't have real questions, but I'm sure there are several. So don't be afraid, and enjoy small groups.